Blog Talk Radio.
three words. Tell this nation what we are talking about. They all speak words. You don't need to have a great vocabulary to utter. You don't need to have a philosophical bent to grasp. They are three little words. We want to let the world know that these words describe what we mean and what we are determined to do about racial injustice. One is the word all. We don't want some of our rights. We don't want a few token handouts here and there. We want all of our rights. There are some people who say that we need to go back to Africa. And then there are some others who tell Negroes in the South, leave the South. You can't be free, so get out. But down in Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia, South Carolina, we'll send something else. We want all of our We want all of our rights here in Alabama and Mississippi and South Carolina. Then there's a third word. It is the word now. We're not willing to wait 100 years for our rights. We're not willing to wait 50 years for what is ours on the basis of the Constitution of this United States and the authority of God. No, we are not willing to wait another 25 years for our rights. We can hear voices telling us to slow up. We can hear voices telling us to cool up. Our only answer in confrontation turn must be that we have cooled off too long, and if we keep cooling off, we'll end up in a deep freeze. We must go on and say, what we are saying to this nation is that we want all of our rights. We want them here, and we want all of them not next year, not next week, but we want them now, at this hour. This is what we're saying.
What your life can truly be. Shining star for you to see. What your life can truly be.
To be honest, this is probably going to be the, and I'm saying this at this table, the most pro-black president that we've had in our lifetime.
So had that asked me, I would have said, you know, before you praise this president for being pro-black, before you praise this president for caring about ethnic communities and marginalized populations, do your homework. Well, some of y'all didn't do your homework. They didn't do their homework. So let me tell you just a little bit of research, not just him personally, but also some of his policies. Perhaps before they went and sat at this table, they should have done their homework. Because if they had done their homework, they would have known that President Trump has ramped up mass incarceration by instructing Attorney General Jeff Sessions to revitalize the war on drugs. They would have known that of the 87 picks for federal judges, 85 have been white and just one has been black and one has been Hispanic. They would have known that President Trump supported the Department of Justice engaging in unlawful voter purges, making it difficult for blacks to go and vote. They would have known that Trump is ending protection for predatory lenders, which disproportionately harm black people. They would have known that he is ignoring the affordable housing crisis by ordering HUD to triple the rents of poor tenants in public housing, which mostly affect black people. Do your homework. They would have known that he is proposing cutting $200 billion over the next 10 years from supplemental nutrition assistance programs that will bring more hunger in black and brown communities. They would have known that Trump is worsening the health of black communities through environmental deregulation, which disproportionately harms black people through exposure exposure to pollution. Now, that's just a few on the policy side, but you don't have to go too far to ask what about him personally would make me know that he is not pro-black. I'm glad you asked, because in 1970, Trump's real estate company tried to avoid renting apartments to black tenants and gave preferential treatment to white tenants. He began his 2016 presidential campaign with a speech disparaging Mexican immigrants as criminals and rapists. Y'all remember that? In 2016, he said of people of color, you are living in poverty, your schools are no good, you have no jobs. Hold on, I'm a product of HBCU, and I'm a product of black school systems and black teachers. Don't you ever tell me that my black schools are... Hold on, I ain't done. He says you have no jobs, so what do you have to lose from electing me? In 2017, Trump said 15,000 recent immigrants from Haiti all have AIDS, and 40,000 Nigerians once seeing the United States would want to go back to their huts in Africa. He spent years suggesting that the nation's first black president was not a citizen of these United States. He called Puerto Ricans, who's criticized his administration's response to Hurricane Maria, he called them politically motivated ingrates. Hold on, but he called those who marched beside white supremacists in Charlottesville, Virginia, he called them very fine people. He hired Steve Bannon, a white nationalist, as his chief strategist. He called Haiti and other African nations S-hole countries, and he's taking credit for an economy that has not been built on his administration, but was built on the backs of 8 years of hard work under the Obama administration. Negroes, please, don't you come up in here talking about this is the most pro-black president that you have ever seen, when the record suggests that he cares nothing about people of color.
Very historical information there. Things are happening. Things are moving. I am a little melancholy right now. Yesterday was my birthday, and 71, whatever that is. I want to tell y'all. But the thing that was that I lost my mother last year at 101 years old, and, you know, birthdays come up, Mother Day come up, and I think about her. My birthday came up, I thought about her, you know. I always go see her and share my birthday with her. On Mother's Day, give her something on her birthday, you know, just visiting. So my you know, it's just, a mother's so special. So if you have your mother, hug her, kiss her, show her love, and they're precious. You know, so if you have a mother, you know, stick with her, be with her, because when she's gone, there ain't no more mama. That's it. So we only get one, only one mama. We all get, all of us get distributed one. So it's so important that you spend that time while they give them, like they say, give them their flowers while they're living. That's important. That's very important. I'm a great advocate of that. I believe that I served my mother very well, and that my brothers and I was there for her whenever she needed. And it's a soothing feeling when they're gone, knowing that you did that which is right unto your mother. It's a soothing feeling, knowing that you try to be the best son you could be. You try to uplift her by doing those things which are right, by encouraging her, by your accomplishments, you know, your family, your marriage, your wife, your children, accomplishing in your life, getting good jobs, buying a house, buying a car. You know, living a good life is very encouraging to your mother. And they say black men have a special relationship with their mother, and that's special, and you have to continue that. And I suggest that everyone, women as well, love and cherish the moments as precious with your mother. The news have so many things going on. The battle continues. The last poet said that the struggle will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised because revolution starts in your heart and in your mind. So however you see that in your life, the struggle continues and it continues and it continues and it continues. And it's like a never-ending saga, never-ending story. It is just going on. But I am determined to do my part. I can't help everybody. I can't participate in everything. And I know sometimes people have their ideas or their ideology of what people should be doing. But sometimes you got to bring that piece to the puzzle. You know, I got my part to do. There's 47 to 50 million black people on this in this country called America. We all got a part to play. So don't get dismayed if you feel that somebody's not doing certain things that you would like to see done. You step in and do it. There are many, many people in this country, African-American people, that will finance a great movement, a tremendous movement that's going towards something positive, economic, social, academic changes in America for black people, African-American people. It's a tremendous support. And that's probably what they can do. They can raise the money, and you have the energy and the physical proudness to get it done. And we all have a part to play. You know, we didn't get here alone. We got here together, whether we like it or not, you know, and whatever it turned out to be, it was together. The Bible said you can live together in unity, or you can die like fools in separation. You can live together in unity or die like fools in separation. So I don't know what some people see. They want to die like a fool in separation. We definitely have to come together. America has a lot of challenges over the years, the history, overcoming certain circumstances. Things have to be changed. Things cannot remain the same. You cannot control everything all your life. You cannot be the boss all the time. You got to make room for others. You got to make room for others. I'm in the process now in my company. For the last 50 years, I've been doing this, and you know, I want to retire and you know make room for someone else. You know, maybe my children as well, but. It's getting to that point now where you're just tired and you want to move on to something different. In your older age, you want to do something different. You want to find hobbies and people go fishing, hunting, boats, and people have boats and yachts and people travel the world at this point in their life. To see different things. And, you know, that's important. That's very important, you know. Conditions in the situation today in America is terrible, you know, the social, economic, societal. But black people have to realize the different levels of conditioning and the different processes of achieving something. The most important thing I try to tell young people is your character. Your character could be bad, and that's on you. Your character could be good, and that's on you. Your character can be above average, and that's on you. Your character is based on you, and you have to distinguish yourself as a person of character. There's the condition in America, a black child do not have the option to do childish, juvenile, delinquent behavior because his perception is that he's criminal. if he picks up a penny off the street, if he takes a Twinkie cake from the store. The society have conditioned and to demonized and criminalized the black male, the black woman, the black family. So if you want to rise above that, you have to be above the board. Your character have to be, you know, with no toxicity, no tainted. You damn near have to be perfect. Now, nobody's perfect. But you can try to perfect something in your character. Your character cannot be taken away. If you are a good person, if you are a person that of means, if you are a person that achieves something, if you achieve academic, you achieve academically to the highest level as possible, if you are financially achieved, if you have design and create, these things cannot be taken away from you. Once you've been said to be the best of whatever profession, whatever that you do, when you show yourself above the average person, that cannot be taken away from you. And sometimes in the condition that we are, we have to be excellent. They talk about black excellence. Black excellence. You have to think about that. You have to be within black excellence. You have to achieve the highest academic ability that you can achieve. You have to go forward to be recognized as the best of the best in the corporation that you work for, the sports that you play, the endeavors that you get involved in, the companies that you built, not just to be self-employed, but to build a dynasty that no one can destroy, but everybody has to praise and say, hey, what did he do? Such a great thing. A lot of people not up for the challenge, but I can tell you about the challenge because I've been there. So a lot of young cats ain't ready. I can talk because I've been there. I've been tested. My life has been tested. The conditions I was around tested me. What type of man I was and what type of man I was going to be, I've been tested. Generally, I passed the test. Normally, then go below a C minus. You know, generally, got an A plus. Things that I've done in my life, people say, wow, you did that, you did this. You must be a genius. You must be smart. You must be know everything. No, I don't know nothing. I ain't all that smart. I work hard. Work is good. The work ethics is good. It's good to have a strong work ethics. Nothing come easy, and everything come easy is something wrong with it, and you can lose it just as fast as you get it. Those things which you had to work for, you keep the longest because they're more precious to you. And those things you didn't have to work for, it seems that it's not necessary important to you. The woman that you get with quick, you leave just as quick. The woman that took time for you to get to her, the relationship lasts longer. The way things are. Set your priorities. Put your priorities in order. Put things important to you that you know you need to do. Your circumstances could have delayed you. You could have been, you know, put away. You could have been not functioning. You could have been sick in the hospital. You could have been delayed mentally. You could have been delayed financially, physically, whatever the situation was. But you have to play. You have to start from square one and work your way back up. You got to pay your dues. You got to serve, like that song said, you got to serve somebody. Ain't nobody serving nobody. So everybody serves somebody. That's just the way the situation is. And there's always going to be someone above you. There's always going to be someone better than you. There's always going to be someone more creative than you. There's always going to be someone seem above you. But if you're comfortable in your skin and you're happy with what you achieved, then so let it be. The conditions of this society have not been designed by us. The controlling rulers and controlling factors created this. And sometimes God lets certain things happen. So what? So you can wake the hell up. So you can realize what's going on in your life and make a change for yourself. It's easy to point fingers and call everybody displaced or not functioning or not doing the right thing or out of place. It's easy to point fingers. But when the last time you took a look in the mirror and said unto yourself, it's me that has to change. You're responsible for yourself. Now, in the interim of life, as you passing life by, you will get some help. You will get people that will help you. But generally, you have to do it yourself. You have to man up. And those things which you know that you did to put you in that bind, you have to do the same damn thing to get yourself out of there. Man up. Stop pointing fingers and excuses and lying and putting other people in deprivation. Look at yourself and see what can you do on this day. The Bible said, give no way for yesterday because it's gone and done. Worry not for tomorrow because it ain't here yet. Do what you can do right now. That's what I've learned in my life. Do what I can do right now in the moment that I am operating. Take care of business, as we say. So these are the things to think about. These are things to think about because I can sure enough tell you when you get a certain age, ain't nobody looking to pull you up and hold you in their hands and cradle you and help you. And those who do help you is limited help. They can pull you but so much and you have to get the rest going. If you don't get the rest going, you're going to be left back. So it's so important that we understand these principles. It's important that we understand those things which I can do. Lord, let me recognize the things I can do, and Lord, the things I cannot do, let me recognize those too. But all the time, Lord, give me strength. Give me the power. Give me the wisdom, the understanding, the knowledge to keep going on. And that's it. That's it. The world is not perfect. The world is not going to conform to your ideology. It's not ready to change yet. I've been around a long time waiting for change. It ain't come yet. Still waiting. That song by Sam Cooke, Born by the River. But a change is going to come. It is going to come. Maybe not in my lifetime. You know, I might not see it. But a lot of people are young enough to be able to see these things come to existence. But you got to do your part. None of us is here as human waste. God didn't create nobody to come on this earth, do nothing, and die. That's the waste of God's physical body, his spirit, everything. The waste of the mind that he created for you to think so intelligently, the hand that he gave you to create so endeavorably, the legs, everything of the human capacity, everything in the human body is just so extremely, extremely unique. We're all unique individuals, but we all have a common denominator. The Bible says the body consists of many parts. And the head can't say, I'm better than the feet. Feet can't say, I'm better than the hands. The hands can't say, I'm better than the legs. Because why? They all have a general purpose, is to move that body from one place to the other. And it takes thought. It takes the brain to generate the information to the body and the body to generate the movement. And that's how we are as a people in this society. We got to create the movement. That's why every revolution is called a movement, because you got to keep moving. So when you think about that which is bad, then you become the change of that. If something ain't working for you, you become the change in it. But that's the way life is. That's the way life is. life ain't going to change until you change. A lot of people waiting on a change that ain't going to come. You got to be that change that you're looking for. Continue, continue, continue to create the best person that you can be. You don't have to mimic or look forward to or try to copy, be a copycat of nobody. Be the person, the best that you can be in your capacity. Do the things that you like to do. Create the thing that you want to create. Make the environment that you want to, the kind of environment you want to live in. You create that environment. You have that ability. Think about it. I'm not saying my word is the last word, the first word, the middle word, the after word, the left, right, front, and back. But I'm saying to you, think about it. The next time you complain about something, think about what are you doing to be a participant of change? Are you just being complacent? Are you participating in the bullshit as well? Think about it. Think about it. Think about it. Well, at this time, we're going to bring in, we're waiting for our host with the most, the man with the plan, Mr. Jaquan Diaz. He's probably going to be a little late, but as we always have, what they call a bird in the bush, a man with another plan, creative in every way, tremendous ideas and thoughts. We're going to bring on the man himself, Mr. Shalik Reed. Give him that nice Neo Nation conversation applause.
Yeah, what's going on? How you doing? How's everybody doing? How's Neo Nation? And how is how you doing, Dr. Robinson? What's going on?
I am here.
Everything? Yeah, you sound good. I like that.
I made another trip in my life called birth. Y'all call it birthday. Earth Day.
Yeah. Happy birthday to you, man. It's a blessing.
Man, thank you so much. I appreciate that. As we say in South Carolina, a man was saying, and I was watching something on YouTube, a man was saying, look at your life in jelly beans.
Oh.
In jelly beans. And anybody ever get a chance, go look at that. Look at your life in jelly beans. And this man takes jelly beans and he just formulates your life from the beginning of your birth to the time of your death. And he uses jelly beans to show it. And it shows how quick we come and how quick we go. Life is to be precious. Life is a thing that you got to do it while you can, because it ain't going to be a lot of time. And what they say, man only have, 8 hours actually? Because you got to sleep sometime, you got to eat, and you got to work. And so you got the leftover time for sleep and try to get your body rejuvenated and back to strength. So, you know, man, been here a long time, brother, but I tell you, you know, it just makes me understand more how life is so precious.
That's the truth. That's the truth, man. You know, it's funny that you said that, because I was actually helping somebody out with their website and basically, you know, helping them construct it. And one of the things that they added in their section was life is meant to be lived. And it was funny because I had to write something to that, and to the degree where I had to give a description. So I'm saying, like, I said, wow, man, it had me think, and it put me in a situation where I was like, damn. And I said, you know what? I had to look at myself, because everything, man, I come to realize is that, you know, a lot of things that you said, it was right on the money. It's like, regardless of how the system has been designed to for us to fail, especially black people. I don't know about anything outside of black, but I know the one thing, when I speak about that, I have to actually see myself, man, in reality. When I hear a president give reparations to Asians and other nations, and black people don't get reparations, right? And you see the policies. I have to look at those things. So, you know, as a black person, that's just my perspective, because I represent the culture. But overall, what I was just saying is that when you look at life, man, I always looked at my life as a sequence of events, one plan one event after the next. So it's one moment in my life, you know, just sharing with you my philosophy, and nobody has to agree. And everybody who's listening, you know, everybody has their own opinion. That's just what America does. It puts us in a divide where we begin to now say, hey, man, I'm entitled to my thought and my opinion, and I don't see it that way, you know, and create the class division and things of that nature. But overall, man, I come to realize, man, it's like life is just a moment. It's one long moment where it's a sequence of events, man, that plays one event after the next. So it's like all throughout the course of my day, if I don't watch how I think or how I carry myself, I can mess up. I can mess up the next event based on the energy that I put out. And it's funny, man, because I come to realize that that's a very important thing, man. How we monitor our energy, man. What we put out is definitely what we get back. So I definitely agree with you on that. But moving right along, I'm just thankful, man, to be alive. You know, you celebrating your birthday, and that's a special day because that's you, when you think about the birth and the day of the birth, it actually is to be recognized and celebrated. And many times, man, we be around people, when we are surrounded around people who tolerate us and don't celebrate us. And so it's good to celebrate you, man. I want to let you know, Dr. Robinson, I celebrate you and not tolerate you on your special day, man. And may you have many more, you know, because life is definitely, it's precious. It's a moment that it comes and it goes. And we never know what the next moment of our lives might bring. So with that said, I just wanted to say, I wanted to pass it on, but I just wanted to also be brief and just tell the two things rather. As one of the things is let the viewers, the listeners know to log into the Clixes.com if you're interested in positioning yourself financially to receive $5 for watching the videos, but you must watch the videos. Also, myprojectneo.org. You know, check that out sign up for the reparations program. Because I could tell you like this, honestly speaking, y'all, Elon Musk, what they call that, artificial intelligence cab service comes into play in the next 3 years or so, that plays along with the energy bill that they're paying, because the energy bill, pay attention, folks. The energy bills that they're passing for these major corporations has a lot to do with the investment of Elon Musk's and artificial intelligence taxis. So it's going to be, think about that. A lot of people are going to be out of business, be out of job. There's, when you are replaced by a machine, there's no unions, you know. And when those machines replace you, there's no union dues, and you need less people to hire. All you need is somebody to just activate operate the machine. Oh, yeah, by the way, for those that's listening, tune in to the Reap More Network, and make sure that you tune into that on Saturday night, from 7 to 9. But I just want to let all the listeners know, man, that it's very important that you tune in and make your investments count when you're tuning into Blog Talk Radio / Neo Nations, and get involved with the reparations program, My Project Neo, because what I could tell y'all right now, if y'all listening and if y'all paying attention, there's a lot of distractions going on in the media. I got from the pipeline from Mr. Robinson, Dr. Robinson, respectfully, that the Supreme Court passed something. And I got that, Dr. Robinson. The Supreme Court's passed something down the pipeline stating that the vaccinations basically are illegal. So I couldn't wait to tune in so that we can try to at least get an understanding of that, because when I look at that, the Supreme Court is saying that technically, man, people are getting vaccinations for a virus that is not clinically, it's basically the companies are getting this money, and people are signing up for things that this has nothing to do with the welfare of the society. This has something to do with another pyramid scheme, so to speak, but that has been sanctioned by the government. So I just wanted to let you expound on that, because I got that text, and I was definitely, I spread that text like wildfire on social media. I said, wow. And but basically, I just want to let y'all people know, let the listeners know, the viewers, which we're going to be having viewership soon, make your investment count with my Project Neo, you know, my reparations program, because my Project Neo with the reparations. And, yeah, be a part of that. Be a part of the solution, not the problem, because you're going to be replaced. Elon Musk has these vehicles that are going to be driving themselves, where he has designed it, where he's working with a company that's designing the chip to drop you off at home, drop you off at work, and then go and make money while you're sleeping and pick you up and take you back to work, pick you up and take you back home. So if you're going to work, your car could be out there making money for you while you're at work, you know. So just pay attention. Jump on board to the opportunities, because there is a revolution that's taking place where there are corporations that are actually fighting. The revolution is not being televised. The people are actually creating things so that other people can receive other forms of income. So I'm just going to let Dr. Robinson expound on the Supreme Court decision in terms of the vaccinations, because maybe I misunderstood some things. And so I wanted you to try to expound on that for me and the rest of the listeners.
Yeah, you know, what happened was I have received that as well. And I was waiting for the news on the news papers or radio or television to expand on it. It was text to me as well. But
right.
I haven't got the confirmation on all information as well. And
right.
a girlfriend of mine point out to me some conflicting statements as well. So
right.
To all the listeners, buyer beware. You know, you get some information, something come across, take a look at it seriously. You know, do your due diligence, and become a journalist where you investigate news and et cetera, and put it together. But as we go forward, in terms of more, you know, probably by next week we'll have some more in-depth information on that as we investigate and get clarity. I don't want to see something that's premature or something that I cannot identify with. While we're talking about reparations and things of that nature, you know, I see the man himself is in the building. He's here with us, and you know, he has a lot of ascension, a lot of things to say about time, willingness, and ableness, and people, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, what we're all looking for, and created so many different programs that I know that I've been a part of, the acts of kindness, food, shelter, jobs, employment, career, training, assistance for those who are least the left out, the depressive person, the homeless, the helpless, the addicted individuals. And, you know, we're going to bring him on as well and hear what he has to say about tonight's conversation. We're going to bring on Dr. James W. Winborn. Let's give a nice hand. Welcome him here.
Oh, man, thank you for having me.
Hey, what's happening?
Yeah.
What's going on?
You sound like Rerun right there. Talking about suit. But what's happening now?
What's happening now? Right. I'm trying, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, as you get a birthday, you start thinking about those things in the past and all this, that, and the other. So maybe I'm bringing up all the movies in my head or sitcoms that I've been watching. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's a hell of a thing, man. People
let me,
is a hell of a
let
thing,
me take
you
this
know.
Time to say happy birthday, happy boy. You know, God
wow.
bless the world
oh,
the day you showed
that,
up. So
oh,
we,
yeah. Holla.
We good. We're going to be all right. Listen.
The Bible says sometimes you got to encourage yourself, right?
Listen, you got to be like David. David said he had to encourage himself in the Lord. He couldn't find no help. Everybody was mad at him because time got wiped out. Everybody he normally go through for a word of encouragement was like, look, nigga, this your fault.
Yeah, definitely.
He had to encourage himself. Yeah, I remember that story.
Yes.
But you know what, Brother Salik was talking about that news that came. I got the text also. I sitting around just like Salik did, because I wanted people to know. I was told there is some rebuttal to it. I was able to find one rebuttal, but it wasn't a credible rebuttal. But I was also thinking that if the Supreme Court had done that, there ought to be more press around that right about now, not unless that was information was has been suppressed. I do know that they're hearing something on the subject matter. I don't know if it's exactly that, and I think they got that case back in April. But I don't know if there's been a ruling on it yet or not, so I'm not in a position to speculate on that. But what I do know, you have more and more credible doctors and scientists that are coming out that are saying, put the needle away because of what's in it. Now, I have been hearing about this what's in this vaccine with the mRNA, and how it affects the DNA. Okay, so you know they have the mitochondria, ribonucleic acid, and how it affects the deoxyribonucleic acid, and we have been hearing about it. But I got something today that is different. And it's talking about the vaccine, and what I'm going to read is very disturbing. So I just want people to listen, because I'm just going to share this right quick, and then we'll get into maybe we'll talk about the reparation program and things of that nature. But piggybacking on what the article that came out yesterday, today's from the LifeSiteNews.com. LifeSite News is a news organization. They interviewed the Nobel Prize winner, Luc Montagnier, Luc Montagnier, and Nobel Prize winner. He is saying this. The Nobel Prize winner, mass COVID vaccination, an unacceptable mistake that is creating the variants in every country. The curve of the vaccination is followed by the curve of, anyway, he goes on to say that all vaccinated, listen, he says right here, and they got it in bold letters, all vaccinated people will die within 2 years. Now, the report that came out yesterday gave it three. This guy today says it's 2 years. Goes on, Nobel Prize winner Luc Montagnier, I'm sure I'm killing his name, has confirmed that there is no chance of survival for people who have received any form of the vaccine. In the shocking interview, the world's top virologist stated blankly, there is no hope and no possible treatment for those who have been vaccinated already. We must be prepared to incinerate the bodies. The scientific genius backed claims of other preeminent virologists, the way it's spelled, but I know they're talking about they study viruses. After studying the constituents of the vaccine, they will all die from the antibody-dependent enhancement. Nothing more can be said. And that was it. It is an enormous mistake, isn't it? A scientific error. He's calling it a scientific error. Some papers saying that it was done by design. He says it's a scientific error as well as a medical error. It is an unacceptable mistake. He said in an interview, translated and published by the Rare Foundation USA yesterday, the history books will show that because it is the vaccination that is creating the variants. Many epidemiologists know it and are silent about the problem known as antibody-dependent enhancement, he said. Then he goes into a bunch of other medical jargon. So that came out today. And that
is totally separate
from what we read on yesterday, or the emails that went around yesterday.
Yeah, because when I sent it to a girlfriend of mine, her mother had taken one of the vaccinations, I don't know, Moderna or Pfizer or Johnson, whatever, and she was like, oh, my God, why my mother did it, you know, and I'm like, wow, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I would think to myself, you know, it's very devastating information. You know, the expectation to the people that you love.
You know, let's pray and hope it's not true. But what I'm seeing and what we are experiencing now, you know, we've been talking about in Underground Scholastic for many years. Back in the mid to early 2000s when they came out with Agenda 21. And in Agenda 21 is a whole proposal about the depopulation of the earth.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And how they were going to control everything. How first they were going to control the food, which they do that now. They control the medicines.
Mm-hmm.
They control the TV.
Wow.
You know, so, and they control what you're getting on your phone. Based on the algorithm.
Right. Someone was saying that science fiction movies detail a lot of reality in it in terms of what people are doing and what people are going to do and what things are going to happen. Because if you watch the science fiction movies, you know, the science is not fiction. They talk a lot about...
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Right. You know, we have this thing on stem cells recreation, and they talk about that. You know, that they have stories on that in science fiction. They talked about modulating the world and the society, changing the conditioning of people, you know, the high tech.
I've seen videos, right? Just how bad this guy and how you can't trust anything. I saw a video. Where they show Dr. Fauci talking into a camera and something is coming up when he moves a certain way. There's looks like something coming up out of his shirt slightly. And it looked like he got on a mask. Like whoever it is got on one of those face masks. And because he's talking and he's got it in his shirt, but when he move a certain way and move his head back, you can see like the bottom of the mask come stick out until he hold his head
right.
back down.
Right. 2005, they had him in Wuhan laboratories doing research. And
in the same laboratory where the so-called breakout was.
Exactly. And they found that he was getting money to do research in United States as well.
Now here's the crazy part about that. And I really don't mean to cut you off, but you know, the more I talk about it, the more start coming back to me. The type of work that they were doing was banned, right? Under the Obama administration.
Mm.
Banned. All right, so what they was doing, they was going in and they was creating these deadly viruses to then see if they could find a way to cure this monster that they created. And that research was banned by the Obama administration. Under the Trump administration, they released it again. And now we have what we have. And we have the man as the chief medical consultant telling everybody what to do and how to handle it, having a direct connection to the place where it leaked from. Him and his boy Bill Gates.
Well, they financially, they all definitely connected. The Wuhan laboratories are connected with the American laboratories, connected with the WHO, connected with the CDC. Fauci definitely in 2005 was there. He definitely came out and said that there is a major virus coming to the West and the United States, Europe, and different places, and it's going to be devastating to the population. And, you know, and now he's acting surprised, you know. So that's what got me. That's what got my attention. That, you know, he's like, wow, you know, this thing is, you know, he keep acting like, oh, my God, where did this thing come from? And then he's saying it's coming, you know.
Right, so the
and then you find out the connection.
Is suspicious, right. Right. Then
like,
you find out
you know that old saying, like, follow the money and whatnot. And when you
right.
follow the connection between the finances, the laboratories, the research, the school financing, the doctoral enhancement of people's degrees and background, you know, people
right.
are getting, you know, Nobel Prizes and stuff like that. They're
Look,
getting
man,
up in their profession.
They've been trying to kill us for the longest, all right? And when I say us, I mean black people. And I don't just mean, excuse me, I don't just mean here in the States. I mean around the world. They would love to get rid of black people, but it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are the world. You can't go nowhere where there's not black people. And
mm-hmm.
I'll tell you something else. You can't tell me nowhere. You can't show me where white people come from.
Mm.
You can't show it to me.
Right.
They have no homeland.
Mm.
All right? They create these illusions. But if you study, you would know that there is no such thing as Europe. Okay?
Mm.
And Europe is a made-up place.
Right.
All
right.
of what we call Europe used to be Asia.
Mm.
And then one time later on, they called it Eurasia. And they finally
wow.
said, fuck it. We're going to make it Europe. You know?
Interesting.
So, and particularly now, and then you think about their reports out that they with the vaccine, the reports are focused on making sure black people take the vaccine. I saw that.
Mm-hmm.
I saw this report, and I heard about this report, that they got it written in the report that the number one people that they want to take the vaccine are black people.
Mm-hmm.
And in the urban community, this was their objective.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, you know something, what you were saying about how Europe was created, you know, by the hands of man, driven to be this European white nation when it was part of China at that time, part of Asia.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that you can do if you do research, one thing they do like a History Channel, do a lot of research about finding whatever they're looking for, these ancient artifacts and things of that sort, so that they can connect the cultures and the people and how things evolved. One thing about it, you can go to Europe and you can, and as you do your research and look things over, you will find remnants of Asia in different places and different, the architect design. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You'll find it in certain languages and certain books. You look at certain streets, names, the way, you know, when you look at Asia and you see how they do that, how they construct their architectural design, the construct of their buildings and their monuments and stuff like that. And when you look in the similarities and you start seeing the things, it says, you say, wow, this is so much like, you know, what I saw in China or something, you know. And that's when you start
mm-hmm.
putting the pieces together. Because those one things
right.
that evolved around mankind is that the artistic areas and things of that nature and development of the architectural design, the construct, like the museums and the monuments and the, you know, the symbols of the society, the different types of buildings and different types of statues and things of that sort. When you look at design, look at words, you start finding the commonality that they share with the other place where, you know, where they actually came from. you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to me that, you know, like California, Miami, and Texas were part of Mexico, and you find the names of the states in the streets and stuff like that, and some of the architectural design, you find it so familiar. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's how you connect. Barbados and South Carolina was really the first places where they started the sugar cane industry, and they were getting people and taking them back and forth. And one of the interesting is that when you go to Charleston, South Carolina, the buildings are so designed like the buildings in Barbados. You wouldn't tell you. People from Barbados think they still in Barbados. And the people, what they call the Geechies or whatever, the people mm-hmm. speak just like the people in Barbados. Bajan people say, yeah, I understand those people in South Carolina when I go to America. And they got this gullah. They call them gullah people in South
gullah.
Carolina. Right.
Yeah.
So they have this.
And
they have
they
this,
got a big gullah culture down there, too.
Yeah, exactly.
And
as well
the
as in Barbados.
Language.
Right. As well as in Barbados. And Barbadians come and they celebrate the similarities in the both of the cultures, because they found that through the research that a lot of the Bajan people are really people that have been in South Carolina. A lot of South Carolina people are people that have been in Barbados. So it's like an exchange of people. But I'm just saying that to say that how interesting it is, we're so far apart, but we're really so close together. You know, people, you know, they say if you really look for similarities instead of differences with people, you will find them. You know what I'm saying? So it's very interesting. You know, like you were talking about how, you know, certain places meant and belong to certain places. And when you look at evolution, how the world evolved,
right?
It, according to them, it was a molecule that exploded and things separated. And then you got the land mass, and then you got the separation, then you got the water mass, and that became the oceans and whatever that separated people. But it was
that
also
was the firmness.
Right.
God divided the firmament from below the firmament from the firmament which is above the firmament.
Exactly. Exactly. And so when people do these research, they're looking at, and they look at people from different parts. Like you can actually, a lady was telling me, and she said, you know, people talk about women styling their hair in the European styles and whatnot and doing things that, you know, suppress the naturalness of their hair. But she said you go to parts of Africa, and they do the same thing with their hair pressing, you know.
Right.
And it's surprising to me there are a tribe in Africa that have that kind of hair style with the women press their hair, you know, to make it soft like white women hair or whatever. And you find
they've
that.
Been colonialized.
So it's like,
they have bought, drank the juice and believe it, that that's good. You know what I mean? That's something honorable. I remember back when we as black people was running around talking about so-and-so got good hair. I got good hair. Only
right.
Trying to find out that ain't
right.
The good hair. That ain't the good hair,
exactly.
Man.
Exactly. Exactly. It looks nice. It looks nice.
It
might smell
nice. You think it looks nice because it's culturally accepted. You know what I mean? So you're going along with it. But that's not the good hair. That's the dead hair. The good hair is standing up. It's a,
mm-hmm.
a current, an electromagnetic current, a conductor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Of
yeah.
Energy.
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely.
You know?
We go see how people buy into concepts, you know.
Right. They buy into concepts. So, and like we bought into concepts that it's okay to struggle. A lot of people have. A lot of our people have. And unfortunately, that's an ideology that's fed to us lots of times through our churches and our religious institutions, that it's okay to struggle because God understands that we're going to get paid in good old by and by. I don't know how I feel about a religion where I got to die to get my money.
Exactly. But you know something?
You know?
When people think about it, struggling is really to give you strength. If you watch, you know, there's there's no such thing as people beginning. There's no big, just like, you know, okay, when you think about it, there's no rich beginnings for anybody. If you were to trace everybody's lifestyle, besides the person that's born into a wealthy family or born into some kind of dynasty or whatever, right? But when you look at it generally, everybody starts from the beginning. The beginning starts with struggle. It starts with, economic struggle, social struggle. So everybody starts at the bottom and work their way up.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I heard? I heard LeBron say this in the PSA, and it stuck with me, right? He said in every story you hear, right, with people that make it, people always talk about this person, how they had a humble beginning. You know, they had a humble beginning. They had a poor beginning. He was like, what if we could make it so there are no more humble beginnings? And everyone could start off secure, financially secure, with the proper backing to navigate as they ought. And I think about that often when I'm doing Project Neo and the reparation program and the way that the system is built. Because I truly believe without any hype, without anything, that once the system catch on and people begin to gravitate and realize what we really have, it is going to create millions of millionaires.
Right.
I already know this. Just by us plugging into the system and working the system, I believe we can create a whole new economic system for black people where it's about circulation and not about trickle down.
Exactly.
And we can begin to get there. It may not happen overnight because I tell everybody Project Neo is not a get-rich-quick program. Project Neo is not even like your regular job or even some of the other things that are out there. Project Neo is a movement, but it's a movement that's going to supply financial independence for everybody in the movement.
Right.
And it's about doing the work. It's about changing lives. It's about saying enough is enough, where we've begged them and we've asked them. And we pleaded with them. And so now we're saying enough is enough. We'll do it ourselves. We don't need you. We don't even want you. In fact, we don't even like you. We've tried to be your friend. We've tried to just get along. For what?
You know, right. You know, and it's just common decency to give everybody an opportunity. Nobody's asking nobody to just give me, let me, give me, send me. People in societies, governments have the ability to make it an equal playing field. Get everybody the opportunities to advance themselves. Those who want to work, those who want to study, those who want to do whatever it is, get up to the next level. Because it's true
to
the fact.
You think that they couldn't have been giving out this money that they were giving out before? You think they couldn't have gave everybody $1,400 before if they wanted to, $600 before? And I understand there's another $1,400 check coming to everybody. I've been hearing rumors about. You think they couldn't have did that before? They could have been did it. It's millions and millions of dollars out there. 1.3. You think they can't, all these empty buildings out here, you don't think they could put the homeless people in them buildings? To see somebody hungry in America makes absolutely no sense. To see somebody living in the street makes absolutely no sense. You have people living in the street next to abandoned buildings. What the fuck?
Right. And I said earlier in the monologue, I said, you know, it's based on your priorities. Everybody got to put their priorities in perspective. Everybody got to say, you know what, I want to go from A to B to C to D. You got to put your priorities straight. If government priorities are not straight, people, you have to have your priorities straight. And that's what the reparation programs, to me, that's the opportunity it offers. Because the government don't have their priorities straight, just like Dr. Winborn said. They give money after everybody done died and suffer. Now they throw money and medical assistance to it. You know what I'm saying? This pre-existing condition thing, it just now something that just started lately. They didn't have that in the past. You didn't have nobody subsidizing anybody's preconditioned situations. People were dying, and people don't know that. But you tell people, somebody died because they didn't have ability to pay for medical services, or they didn't have a tremendous medical insurance that backed them up 1,000%, and they died. You know what I'm saying? Even people talk about people with no insurance. The hell with people with no insurance. If your insurance, Blue Cross Blue Shield has different levels of insurances. If you got the lower level Blue Cross Blue Shield, you're not getting into no pre-existing condition that's life threatening. That's a limb removing or cancer or something that's very extremely devastating. That's going to take a lot of work to repair you. You're not certain. Even insurances, people don't talk about this. The insurances are weak in a lot of cases. Most of these companies, they pay people nothing and they give them a week benefits. So they give them insurance card, but it's not worth, you know, maybe a dental and an eye examination probably not the best thing you're going to get. So when you get a real devastating situation, you got to go to the emergency room, you're not covered. So it's priorities. It's where the priorities of this country is, where the priority is the president. Where's his priorities? Where's he citing? Where do he see himself doing anything? People hear these politicians talk, yada, 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 blah, 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 say whatever they know is clever, whatever they know the Hispanic want to hear, whatever they know the black want to hear, what the Jew want to hear, what the Italian, the Mexican, they got a script for everybody. They come in your neighborhood, they're going to talk Spanish, they're going to talk Arabic, they got a script for everybody. But where is their priorities? Their priorities, you want to find out where's a politician priority, a U.S. senator, a congressman, a councilman, okay, assemblyman, a district leader, whatever it is, president, vice president, governors, mayors, when you want to know their priorities, check their voting record. And 9 times out of 10, their voting record is going to reflect whatever their party says is good. If they're a Democrat, a politician, and Democrats say, well, you know, it's good to have social services, they're going to jump on that because they're going to please the party. That's why when these people go into these, check this out, when these people go into this political arena, they have to get accepted by what? The political party. They have to say, I'm a Democrat, I'm a Republican. They have to be accepted by a political party. Very few independent, no matter how much money they throw after it, very few independent politicians make it to serve in the Congress and the Senate. Very few of them don't. If you're not a party represented person, 9 times out of 10, you don't make it, because a party represents the whole structure of the system, and the party says, yes, Dr. Winborn is good, he can come on in here, you know, and then they're going to send him down and they're going to indoctrinate you. They're going to tell you things that you should support, things you should not support, things you should do, things you should not do, what you should say, what you should not say, you know. So when you hear these politicians talking, you got to make sure that you understand what's necessary in your communities. And like they said, everybody overlook the local politician and go straight to the top, when the most important effective person that can change the situation in your state is your local representative, because every state have different laws. The governor's office is a powerful office for that state. You know, the people overlook the state senator, okay? He's not U.S. Senator. He's not United States Senator. He don't go to Washington, D.C. Because when the U.S. Senators go to Washington, D.C., they got to ponder whatever's good within that day. But the state senator, he has more application to do things which are good for his state or his district or his area, 9 times out of 10. But if ain't nobody asking him for nothing, nobody's on top of him, nobody's saying, listen, we watching you, he's going to do whatever he wants to do. And that's why we end up where we at. And, you know, a lot of intents and purposes, you know. I'm going to open up the mic for 718-350. I know that's Ronald A. I know he has always some good added messages.
How you doing, brother?
Okay.
Greetings, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm doing pretty well, thank God. You know, so it's something just got in a little late listening to the conversations. The point on one conversation with regards to care, ethnicity, what have you. There were five human beings. All right, in Africa. Some had blonde hair, hazel eyes. Some had very short, pinky hair, depending on where they were. Blue eyes, brown eyes. Some had long hair, like we say, like white women. Brown eyes, hazel eyes. Then you had an albino. We're, and there are two other people, but we're the only ones that can produce the people of the world, the what have you. White people can only produce white people.
Right.
Okay, so when we talk about it, we got to think about, you know, white hair, good skin, bad skin, light skin, or what have you. Well, it wouldn't be there unless it was for us.
Right.
We're the progenitors of all of that.
The progenitors, and I tell people this, that everything in its purest form, when it is full of life, is rich in darkness.
Hey,
and when we find stuff, most stuff that we have that is, and this is not a racist comment, this is science.
No.
Most stuff that we have that's white is because it's been stripped of this life force energy.
Yes.
And I told people sugar is not white.
Yes.
Bread is not white.
No.
Even flour is not white.
Not white.
Damn
yes.
it, if you look at milk good, it ain't white when it
yes.
first come out the cow. It's
mm-hmm.
great. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
it's not until you start strike yourself from it. And then I tell people, listen, here's how you know that black comes, everything comes from black. It's real simple. It's a real simple question I ask people. And I'll be like, sweetie, what color is your TV screen when you cut it off?
Black.
It is black. And when you cut it on, all the other colors come from there. At the Crayola factory, the crayon company couldn't make black crayons, they'd go out of business.
Well, to make black out of crayons, you got to use all the prime crayons to make black.
Right, because all those colors come from the black.
All those colors make, you know,
right.
So, you know, we have to, and that with that said, Doctor, with all of that said, and even going into the finance, situation, with all of that said, if we start from the base.
Right.
Okay. It's just like they said, so-and-so discovered electricity. Well, no, he didn't. Electricity is always here, and they used it in Africa before most white people were known. You know?
Absolutely.
So we start from the basis, as my half-brother said over there.
Let me have to call Daddy on you now.
Hey, look, listen.
I'm going to call Mama on you.
He's still celebrating his birthday. We're not going to mess with him.
Say, this is a personal conversation. but if we start from the basis of economy in general.
Right.
It all comes from the soil. You know, the money comes from the soil. I'm not just talking about gold, because gold wasn't really worth too much. Salt was worth more than gold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so on. So when you take these things from the earth, the nutrients, the food, the colors, and everything else, then you are wealthy. What changed the situation in Africa is because when the cave people, which come from us also, or unless you want to go into the Yakub theory, you know, the
mad scientists.
Yeah, the mad scientists, you know. All right, if you want to go into that, that's what Islam, you know, teaches. But if you want to go into that, what happened, the jealousy of these people in what they called Europe, because there were black people in Europe before anybody else. Right.
Right.
But as the earth changed, the weather changed, north beyond the Caucasus Mountains were cold. They didn't have a lot of food, all right, and so on. And they lived in that harsh land, and that created their personalities as well. You know, because the only way you can live and survive is to take what you, you know. You had one tribe or another, you had to take what you needed to survive. So as Europe or Germanic or whatever you want to call that area up there decided to come farther south, and they saw the lusciousness we didn't need for anything.
Right.
You know, food, water, you know, medicine, electricity, you know, a whole host of things as we went along. They said, well, listen, I can't grow potatoes, or I can't grow wheat, you know, I can't grow this where I am, but they can. I'm going to go down there and take it. Or I'm going to corrupt some of the people so they can give it to me, and they'll be my slaves, and I don't have to work. They'll work for me. You know, so, and well, we have to think from the basics, from the bottom. And, you know, people don't like to get their hands dirty. Well, you're not going to be welcome. You know, nobody wants to put their hands in the soil or farm anymore. Well, you know, what happens when you get all this technology and everything else and there's no food? Or there's not a carpenter or a plumber or electrician or so on and so on and so forth. Without all of those things coming from the soil, there's nothing left coming from God. There's nothing left. You can't develop nothing from nothing. You know, but if you have something, you know, when I see the immigrants come here, you know, and we're not immigrants, but when I see immigrants come here and they work off the basis of what they have in their country. If they were masons and bricklayers, fine. If they were farmers, you see them on the corner chopping up that cassava and chopping up all that to sell you, you know, anything they need to do because that's something they learned at home out of their kitchens. But when they were not able to feed themselves because of the political, social, economic situations there, and they came here, by the skills they had, they're able to feed themselves. You know, they're my gardener. Started out with a lawnmower, now own 2 trucks.
Wow.
I ain't mad at them.
Mm.
I ain't mad at them. There's a brother that was my gardener. He had 2,000 accounts.
Wow.
But he wasn't doing right.
Mm.
He was stealing from people, not doing the right job, ignoring his money. Don't screw your payroll, you know.
Wow.
And so on. So I'm not, you know, I see these brothers. I go into Jamaica, and I used to go into Jamaica to buy some clothes, shoes, and stuff. I can't go into Jamaica to buy shoes, coats, clothes, or anything else like that because they're catering to the Guatemalans.
Mm.
You know, they're catering to Central Americans, you know, South Americans. I can't fit their clothes on my right hand.
Wow.
But the market there in Jamaica has changed. So I have to go online or go someplace else to buy clothes or have them made for me. So change is inevitable. You know, it's also how we're going to deal with it. You know, are we going to keep something that's catering that we can live with, or we can complain about what somebody else has taken? Remember, white folks used to tell us, you know, y'all taking our jobs. I said, well, give us some money for what we earned, and we won't take your job. We'll make our own. You know?
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, we have to think of all these thoughts, you know, and there's a myriad of them on the prayer chain, you know, that we probably haven't even thought about yet. You know? But what we're doing here, you know, with the Neo Nation and so on, I believe it's going to work. I got to work harder, but it's going to work, you know. And for people who now say, oh, this is a hustle. And I've talked to a lot of people, you know, this is hustle. Well, how this can be, is this legal? You know, sometimes so it's like saying that we're so spiritual, we have no earthly good. Well, sometimes we're so legal, we're stupid.
We've been brainwashed.
Yeah, brainwashed
and believing that anything, if the white man don't tell us that it's right and we could do it,
ISIS just told us.
You know what I mean? And it's so funny when I hear people with 9-to-5 jobs want to talk to me about being a part of a pyramid. I just look at them like, you don't even know what you into. You in the pyramid.
What is a corporation? What is a multinational corporation? It's a pyramid.
It's a pyramid. And so you've been brainwashed to believe that if the white man tell you that it's okay, then it's okay. You know how you get money the way that they tell you to get money. You're not capable of coming up with something for yourself. You're too stupid.
Well, that's also what the word minority means.
Right.
Someone
you're incapable of making decisions for yourself.
Of making their own decisions and doing it for themselves. Yeah, so, you know, where we go from here? You know, I know we have a good start again.
We got
this has to be the last start.
That's a good question. Where do we go from here? And that's a big question now. Since BLM, since George Floyd, since the continuation of killings, you know, where do we go from
and
here?
And it's enhanced itself. Since Floyd, there's been over 1,000 police shootings. There's been over 200 and some odd mass murders, mass killings, since George Floyd. This is a little more than a year. And there was more police shootings than there have been in the past 10 years prior to George Floyd.
I mean, it's gotten outrageous. The whole police system is corrupt. I'm sorry. You want to tell me that those are bad apples? Nah, you got this whole thing is bad apples. Ain't no such thing, in my opinion, as a good cop. All right? Because if it was, then there would be no bad ones. Because you right there with the goddamn criminals.
And if there's a good cop that don't check the bad cop, he's a bad cop.
He's a bad cop.
You know?
So I don't want to hear that nonsense to me. You know what I mean? That is just utter nonsense.
Yeah. It is true. But we have a long way to go between Neo Nation, Ethiopian World Federation, and all those other things in between. We have to push as the murderers that came here, and we're given the right, and ask the right to ask that don't pay attention who's there, kill them, murder them, take them. And that was the Catholic Church. That was Pope. You know?
Right.
Right.
I mean, that order that for us being 3/5 of a human came from the Catholic Church.
Yes,
it came
it
out of Christianity.
Yeah, the three-fifths human.
I think Diaz, Joaquim is in the house.
Yes. Joaquim is here. We've had the previous conversation, but we're going to bring the man on himself, the man with the plan, the host with the most. Come on, y'all, get together here. You got to find these people. You know, they start to play games.
Listen, you know, they thought they was off.
There you go.
Hello, brothers. Hello. God bless everyone. I'm so
God bless,
sorry.
God bless, Mr. Jaquan Diaz.
Yeah, Jaquan. This is not fashionably late. This is late. I'm very apologized. I was really busy moving around, but I'm here now. God bless. I can finish the last half an hour with you guys.
Wonderful.
So who's here? I heard the brother Gregory talking. We actually had a good Zoom conference earlier. Brother Dr. Winsborn. How are you, brother?
I'm doing good. Thank God. I am blessed and highly favored.
God bless. And brother Ron, both Rons, really.
Hey, hey, hey.
Yeah, I'm round number one. He's number two.
Oh, wow.
So in general,
we can't go to the bathroom together.
I overheard a little bit. You guys talking about the you guys was talking about, I guess, the police brutality and what was happening around the country.
Yeah, a lot of things, but yeah, that too. You know,
among other things,
a lot of things have digressed or was meant to keep us in a position where everybody else can rise. You know, but you know,
right.
God is the last word.
Right.
You know,
so it's good that we was on that topic because I'm gonna try to use this last bit of time to talk about what I wanted to talk about today on today's show. So what I wanted to draw attention to was more in detail of the story of Moses and the children of Israel. And it's very important to understand this story because I believe the story is an indefinite testament of time, meaning, yes, the story of Moses physically happened in the literal. Yes, Pharaoh may have been a physical living person, but the story was reserved throughout time as a blueprint or what will happen in the future. So Pharaoh, yes, he represents a person, but he also represents a figure. He is an oppressive government. He is a system that created a caste system. He is the system that created racism and capitalism and exploitation of one weaker person to rise the position of another. So God contained that story, and the story of our prophecy of being contained under bondage and someone's rule for 400 years for us to see what we needed in the future. So something in the story that if you don't know a lot of the historical background, you're not going to really grasp the full significance of the story of Moses. So after Joseph, who was a prophet that ended prior to Moses, Joseph actually became the ruler over Egypt when he, through God's guidance, was given that position after doing a lot of time in prison. He became the most wise out of all of them. God gave him the position to interpret the Pharaoh's dreams. At that time, Egypt was under a different rule. Now, the gap between the story of Joseph and Moses is a gap, and if you can't fill in the historical, what happens in the historical gap, you're not going to grasp why Moses was dealing with the Pharaoh he was dealing with. So during that time period, Egypt was left, you know, sophisticated. It was left in a certain state after Joseph. And they've even uncovered, like, in the pyramids, large pockets to, like, insulate air for heating and electricity that those pyramids are actually capable of. A lot of things that they hid from the masses of the technological advances of us as a people. I'm talking batteries. I'm talking all of that. That was already there. Or everything we make in far as electricity, batteries, and all that was there. They had it. So this was the grace that God gave them. But when Joseph passed in that time period, there's a group of people called the Hyksos. Now, Hyksos was a group of European descent that actually mixed with our blood. So they were of the Hyksos dynasty, and this took place around 1700 BC. Now, when this was happening, they went in there and destroyed the Egyptian empire that Joseph was dealing with. This is why a lot was lost. They was changing hieroglyphics. The children of Israel was put under slavery. They was destroying their culture. They just trying to destroy their religion, make them forget the God of Abraham prior to, you know, Moses' arrival. So this is why the children of Israel were enslaved. Now, they weren't allowed to study anything, you know, language, reading, learning about prophecy, et cetera. They did not, the Pharaoh made sure to put a stranglehold on education. Now, in everything I'm saying, as I break down this man's method, you're going to see how it's not far from the oppressive systems that we are dealing with today. Not far. How he created it. Now, when Moses was coming up, you know, he was a righteous person, and he knew, you know, about his background in part. But Moses also, in part, grew up around the Egyptians, being in the company of the Pharaoh. And this was part of God's plan, because to bring the Pharaoh down, he wanted somebody who actually understood the Pharaoh, knew his methods, grew up in that, but seen the plight of his people. So after this fact, before the Pharaoh was confronted, at the time, he was divided among multiple government structures, him being the king and Pharaoh of all, but he had generals and all over Egypt and all over different parts of Africa. His reach of power stretched far. So now a lot of people don't understand that what he had was considered magic. But the magic that he had was because of the scientists or magicians that he had specializing in what they was using, which was gunpowder, illusions, smokes, all of that. He just made sure they focused on using all of that. And he had the top of the line people in place to, like, at his beck and call to do whatever he wanted. So the people started to revere him as a god because of the signs that he would perform in front of the people. You know, if you got gunpowder, you got explosive. If the people don't know about gunpowder, they don't know what you're doing. You go in front of the masses of the people, and you're speaking to the people, and you're like, hey, listen, if anybody don't listen to me, I'm going to incinerate this guy to fire. And you got a rod in your hand, and you got somebody set up with gunpowder and whatever. He was doing illusions like that, so it was shocking. Everybody really thought he had magic. So his Egyptian magicians were so good at it that nobody could challenge nothing he did. And this is why God always rises up someone to challenge man's technological advances of its time, to show you that God's knowledge is beyond that. So, yeah, you had the top Egyptians, so he sends Moses in there to perform the miracles. Now, the miracle when he threw the staff, there's two lores, right? So you can take from the biblical story. The biblical story is missing certain pieces if you don't read the historical background of the scholars and that found other things. So the extension of the story was when Moses went to confront the Pharaoh, they were in front of all the people to see. And when he threw the staff, when they threw the staff on the floor, they made the stick move and everything. They thought it was alive. Everybody there thought the guy summoned real snakes. But when Moses threw his staff on the ground, and it became a living snake, at first they saying, oh, we just did the same thing. But when the snake ate magician's illusion, the magicians actually repented right there. They said there's no one else who could breathe the breath of life into anything but God. And they worshiped God right there. Pharaoh said, who is it that gave you permission to believe in a God in whom I have not acknowledged yet? Who is it to you? Who are you to believe in anything except for what I have told you to believe in? So now that he said, if you do not stop your worship, and I will crucify you from your hands and your feet, and I know that you've been working with Moses, and it's a plight against me. And then the people said, they were crucified and killed, these magicians. And they told them that our soul is with God. We're ready to die. We've realized just now we are the masters of this craft. That's God right there. And Pharaoh was still hardened. He was still hardened over that fact. He was not trying to change. Now, after the final miracle, when he took all the firstborn sons from the Egyptians, and whoever didn't put the blood of the lamb on their door was going to die, another significance of the promise of the Messiah, whoever didn't accept the Messiah when the Messiah came, you're going to be cut from the book of life. And this is another thing that they knew was coming, and they were supposed to wait for, prophesied before even Moses, the coming of a Messiah in the end. So they were all to hold on to that. And they were trying to destroy that hope in multiple times throughout history. And this is one of the biggest senses where they tried to destroy a large portion of our hope or our history away from us. So now the final stance is when Pharaoh actually let the people go. Now, when the people go, there's a part of the story when you read the Bible, it sounds like people are complaining. Why did you take us out of here to die in the wilderness? Why did you take us out of here away from Pharaoh when Pharaoh was giving us this? And at least Pharaoh gave me wheat for my long hours in the sun. You brought us out here to die. Now, the historical standpoint on it is the people who were saying this was the elderly. And the reason why the elderly were in there is because they were bred and born in captivity. And the young, even though they were born in captivity, their souls were restless at that time. So when Moses was leading the revolt, most of the youth were the ones who were saying, listen, we're going to fight with you. And it was a few elders that actually had the will and fight left. So if you look at it like current times, listen, let's put our wealth here so we can go do this and so we can be independent. Wow, but I have public assistance. Wow, but I have SSR. Wow, but I have welfare. Why would I sit there and go your route and be independent from the government? But the government gives me these things that I need, and I'm fine. You see, he did the same thing. The Pharaoh did the same thing. He gave them for the work that they did, your labor is really yours. It was yours. And he made them work back for piecemeals of what was already theirs. And this is the same situation that we're in right now. And now the final sign of was when he chased them out to kill them. Now, Moses he parted the Red Sea with his staff because God gave him the power to. He told him, strike the at the edge of the sea, and I'm going to part the ocean. When the sea parted for Moses, they traveled across the Red Sea, and Pharaoh was gaining on them. And when Moses made it to the other side of the water, he started striking the staff down to make the water crush the Pharaoh. And in this account, there's a Quranic account and there's a biblical account. And I like to look at both stories because it, like, gives you an extension of what happened. And basically, when he makes it across the water and he's trying to bring the staff down, God tells Moses, it was by my power that sea part, and it's by my power will the Pharaoh die today. So, again, he led the people of Israel not through your power but through mine. I put the staff in your hand as a symbol, meaning through you, I'm going to act, but that stick has no power. And he let Moses know right there, there's no power in you or that stick. By my power did that ocean part, and by my power I'm going to crush him. This is my glory. You done your job already. Get out my way. So Moses, for that moment, he finished his job. You done. I got it from here. So now when the water started to come down on Pharaoh, he was going to die. All his men were dying around him, and he was about to die. Through the fear of what was happening, called out. And he called out, and he said, I believe in the God of Moses. Now, when he said that, he did not say, I only believe in the God of Moses apart from myself. He acknowledged the God of Moses, but in his heart, he still acknowledged himself as a God besides God. So right there when he was dying, he went to utter the next words. And before he uttered it, angel, this is the scary part, because I'm going to give you the historical side of this. The angel Gabriel rushed into the water. He grabbed the Pharaoh by his throat and crushed his throat and stuffed mud into his throat until he died, filled his lungs up until he died. God summoned Gabriel and asked Gabriel, he said, why is it that you killed that man before he was going to die anyway? He said, because God, I was afraid. And God asked Gabriel, he said, what were you afraid of? He said, I feared your mercy. I feared had he uttered those words and that entered his heart that he asked you forgiveness wholly, I feared you was going to forgive him. And God told him, he said, had he uttered those words, I would have cleaned the Pharaoh's slate. He would have forgave the Pharaoh if his heart would have really changed. And this is a monster. And if he would have changed, God said, I would have forgave him. But he was done. His story was done, and it already prophesied he's in one of the lowest lakes of hellfire. So his system was done. But challenge it. There's a guy named Maurice Boukaisel. Maurice Boukaisel was part of the council that discovered the Pharaoh's body in the Valley of the Kings. In the Quranic account, when his body was taken, there's a verse that says, "This day will I remove you from the sea, and you will be a sign for the generations to come." And now they have his body in Cairo, Egypt, but the scholars that were a part of when they found his body, they didn't even know who he was. And his body, look it up, Google it right now, his body looked like a sleeping man, like he wasn't even damaged, perfectly preserved. And they didn't even know who they was dealing with until somebody says, listen, this is prophesied in the Bible and the Quran about this man dying like this. This is Ramses II. This is the Pharaoh. And they were all in the council like it's impossible. Oh, let's see his way of death. Guess what? His chest cavity was crushed in, like someone crushed his chest cavity, and they found salt from the salt water in his lungs from his death. So they found his body. He's already found. He's in Cairo, Egypt, and he stands as a sign. And this is the sign that I feel God is telling us. No matter what superpower, no matter what adversary, no matter what technical advances man receives, he will humble anybody. He did it with Nebuchadnezzar. He did it with great other tyrants throughout time. You go look through the Japanese dynasties. You look at the Ottoman Empire. You look at the Turks. You look at Genghis Khan. You look at anybody, Napoleon. You look at anybody. He's ended their era. Every time God let him send some people. People should look more about what ended the Sumerians, what ended the Atlanteans and the Mayans. These people were obviously approached by prophets and everything. And they reached all kind of technical advances for naught. It's for nothing. Because the Mayans, they don't even know where they went. Can't even find traces of their body. They're gone. Many civilizations has he done this many times. He warns you, listen, you guys are doing a little too much. I understand you're getting excited. But listen, there's boundaries in my universe. If you transcend the boundaries, I'm going to end this. And he's ended it. The thing is, in our present time, he's merciful even more. He keeps sending little disasters around the earth to see if we're going to, if we don't see that our actions is the repercussions of what's happening in the planet. And the reason why the story of Moses is so important is because us at the Neo Nation and the reparation program is doing just that. Because what they was called to after they ran against from the oppressor, after they stood against them, they were invited into the promised land, and it was still work. Because God made them wander 40 years in the wilderness, and this was because of their disobedience. Because even though they migrated, right, and supported Moses in their heart, they still missed the fact that they had somebody who was just handing them out, not having to deal with military affairs, not having to deal with the communal development and building for themselves, educating themselves for their future generations. They didn't have to deal with that anxiety. So now that they did, elderly was the one who rebelled against Moses. So God told them to wander for 40 years. Why? Because he killed off the entire previous generation. He killed all of them. And a lot of the only one standing was the youth. 40 years, he killed them. In the law, it tells you. He let them wander until everybody who didn't want to stand in rebellion for God died. He let none of them touch it. No heart that was not ready to touch this will touch it. And he says, I never change the condition of a people till they first change the condition with themselves. So we as a people as a whole is in a plight, and God sees it. And he's saying, I'm not going to change it until you change yourselves. So this program and us coming together, I wanted to expand on a higher platform. And we need more people to either be sharing about what the reparation program is. And what it is the ability to take control, to have the ability to invest your money and it circumambulates over 24 hours in our hands. It's powerful, and the more of us that come together to do that as we transition to the next steps of this mission, it's gonna be better for us in the long haul. And this is a call to the promised land. This is not you sitting back and letting the Pharaoh still play with your dollars, letting all these banks take your dollars and trade it on the market and increase it in interest and then give you piecemeals back. This is that system. And God is telling you, I'm going to crush it. So if you attach to it too much, then when the hellfire comes, you're going to burn and blow with it. Could move away from that, and you could lead yourself to the promised land. So you got to ask yourself, do you want to walk with wickedness, or are you going to walk with righteousness? Are you going to follow God, or are you going to worship the devil? Because at this point, it's a one or the other, because the world has become so much in shambles that you could see that his world that he's creating for himself is a virtual hell. And a lot of people think the devil is the ruler of hellfire. He has no jurisdiction over hell at all. It's a dimension he has no power over. But, you know, the movies and the TVs want to just sell that dream to everybody. But he has no power over life, death, or hell, or heaven. So this being is here on earth. And what I believe that is happening right now is he's conditioning the planet. And the reason, you got to think about it like a creature like a spider or a pest that has to, that has to, like, make the environment suitable to breed in. And this is what he's been doing since the beginning, trying to condition the planet into a state for his supreme rule. Now, once he keeps poisoning all the governments and keeps strategically putting the rulers he wants in place, the scary part about it all is I truly believe he's going to take physical form. I truly believe that he will figure out how to incarnate himself into our physical world, and that is the beginning of this final war. This is the Antichrist. And the way that the planet and everything is unfolding, I believe it for what it is. I don't even think of it metaphorically no more, because it's too beyond. Like, the way that the police is set up, to the governments, to the armies, to everything is set up, it's like they're trying to remove the creator out of everything. And there was a way that the brother Dr. Winsborn had mentioned the creator, and he mentioned the source. You know, from God you come, to God will be returned. Just like your physical source is from the planet, far as the earth. From dust you came, to dust will be your return. But the soul is where we came from, God, and everything has its beginning and its source. And if we don't go back to the source, then you can't reach the finish line. If we don't understand that our allegiance is to something beyond our finite abilities, and that we need the creator to get us there to beat the influence of the devil, we ain't going to win. We ain't going to win. And I call anybody listening and everybody who is participating around in the reparation and listening to Neo Nation, go join the reparation program. Make sure you guys are on this show educating yourselves on this. By the time we're on YouTube and larger platforms, we need you guys sharing and getting the word out, because we're not just doing this for our health. We're doing this with an undying passion to please the creator and actually do an impact for humanity. We want to impact our humanity in a great way, and we want to make up for our ancestors. They died during the slave trade. Some of our bloodlines really stream who knew they were dead. Look at the virtue. They knew it was over. But they like, we got to endure this so down the line our future generations could get us back to where we need to be. That's selfless. Your ancestors, what are we going to do? Sit back with our feet up and keep under the Pharaoh's rule and never commemorate our ancestors for what they sacrificed for? It wouldn't be fair to them. So that's my call to everybody, and I'm going to continually use the stories of the past with relevant times so we can see that these stories are a lasting testament to what we need to deal with right now. And God didn't forsake nobody. He didn't forsake nobody. He left a blueprint. He left blueprints and signs for us to pay attention. His true believers who believe in him without seeing him. Like, we got to hold on to that. whatever form or fashion you pray, make sure you have a direct communion with the Creator. Don't let everybody tell you it's a bunch of fancy this and this, that, and the third. It starts with your first approach to the Creator and how you love Him. So, you know, that's our show for today. And I'll let anybody else, you know, say any closing comments or anything. And I appreciate you guys giving me the floor again to drop something on you guys. And make sure you guys keep God in your heart. And remember that all these things is towards the greater good. And God left us a blueprint to get us to the promised land. God willing. Yeah, that's my spell. Is everybody still there?
I'm here. I'm sure Dr. Robinson is somewhere around.
I guess the mic's muted.
Yeah, maybe his mic is muted. Hello. I'll meet your mic, birthday boy.
Oh, it is his birthday. So that is, oh, happy birthday. I'm seeing that notice on Facebook. I'm like, that means I had Brother Robinson as my friend on Facebook before I spoke to him in jail. That's funny.
Wow. All right. Well, you know what? The clock ticking on us. So listen, I don't know what happened to Dr. Robinson, but we want to invite everybody back tomorrow night for the Black Business Billionaires Club. Dr. Robinson will be back. Brother Salik, the other Ron Robinson.
I'm trying my best to make it in there.
Brother Zias, everybody, come on back. And we'll see everybody tomorrow. Peace and good night.
Good night.
Come on, everybody, put your hands together. It's got to get better. All over the world, listen to these words. People come.
People go.
People
go.
Your life has been out of control.
You're confused.
But don't worry.
Don't worry. Your song, it will get better.
It's got to get
better.
better.